Well, that's great. Sonny Clark with a little number called Cool Struttin'. He's on piano. Jackie McLean on alto sax. Art Farmer on trumpet. Paul Chambers on bass. And Philly Joe Jones on drums. This is the title track from the 1958 album of the same name. I keep saying, when you do a thing really, really well, it stands up to the test of time. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we have some talking to do. Well, first up, President Joe Biden appears to be signaling an intention to run for re-election when his term ends in 2024. And the question here is to you, should he go for it or not? If so, then why so, in your opinion? And if not, then why not? Let's try that on for size as we start out at 888-874-4888. Should President Biden, who has been hinting all over the place that he's ready, he's getting psychologically ready for a brutal fight, and nothing will stop him, but, you know, that's what he says. Should he seriously consider running for president in 2024, or should he say, thank you very much, that's been a pleasure knowing you, but I gotta go. I have some resting to do. What do you say? 888-874-4888. Should Biden pick up the gauntlet once again or throw it down, whichever he wants to do, in 2024? That's your question. If you think he should, you have to be prepared to explain why you think he should run again. If you don't think he should, also, you should explain why you came to that conclusion. Okay, we have started. And I'm looking for names. I'm looking for people popping up on the board. I see no names yet. You guys are just too slow. You got to put some pep in your step. You have something to say, get to it. Don't wait to find out what other people are saying. And if you think you might agree with them or disagree with them, you have a mind of your own. So what do you think about this proposition? Is Biden encouraged to run again? Should he? Or should he just say, thanks very much, it's been nice knowing you, but I gotta go. I have other things that I need to do. Time is running short, and I am not about to go through this experience again. Henry from Chicago, you start us off today.
Hey, Eutrice, how's it going?
Okay, Henry, how's about you?
All right. Hey, we had a little heat wave. It's 35 degrees.
Wow! That is a heat wave in Chicago.
Yes, it is. Okay, so the question on the table, should Biden run in 2024? If he is still alive by 2024, I would suggest him not to run.
Why do you say that?
I'm serious. I am concerned about his health even before that time. I mean, I don't wish death on the guy, but he's not healthy. He is not healthy, and you can tell by the way he talks. I mean, he, I mean, my dad, who is 86 years old, still can talk better than he does. And so I just got a feeling he's, like I said, I just hope he's, you know, he still lives through his term. But if he's still alive in 2024, there is no way he should be running again. No absolute way.
No way.
Just for the sake of his health. And just for the sake of the health of the country, because, I mean, for me, I'm tired of looking at 70-plus-year-old men taking the country down, you know, down this road to hell. So, you know, we don't need another four more years of a deranged old man to take us down, you know, I mean,
You're kind of rough today. What's going on?
I mean, like I said, we've had 8 years of, you know, people with deranged mental illnesses taking our country down the road to hell.
Oh, my Lord. You're rough. You're rough today.
Yes,
so you don't want another term of a person who is not altogether there mentally. And you're referring specifically to Biden.
No.
Okay. Who do you think would make a pretty good candidate? Who would interest you?
Oh my God. Are you referring to a candidate I think will be good, or a candidate who I think will be good with a chance to win?
A candidate who you think has a good chance to win if he or she runs.
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, the ones that I know, they have no chance to win. I mean, there is one with a slight chance, and you mentioned him on your show a couple of months ago, and that's possibly Andrew Yang. I still think he's a corporate politician, but he's not as senile as the last two presidents, first of all.
Oh, my God.
But
you have it ready for the senior citizens today.
It's not. It's, like I said, my dad will probably be a much better presidential candidate than the last two presidents, and he's much older than them. But Yang probably is, even though he's still kind of right of center, he's a little close to the center than any of the candidates that I know, but I just don't think he has a good chance of winning the election if, you know, when it comes around. But I think he's probably the best candidate, in my opinion, that has a small chance. But all these other candidates that I think will win or will replace Biden, I have no thoughts or opinion on them.
All right. Well, thank you for getting us started today. Gwen from New York, what do you think?
I have a different opinion from the last caller. First, I want to say that, yeah, I don't have a lot of feelings for Joe Biden either way. It just is another suit up there, and, you know, very, very little. Some action has been taken, but not that much that I think is so, you know, incredible or radical. So it's just another guy that's just doing the same thing they always do. And sometimes that's better, because it's better than what Donald Trump gave us. It's not as scary as that. But, you know, I want to say that people are living longer today, much longer than they used to. And I wouldn't say that somebody should be discarded because they're in their 70s, because people are making it to much, much older in their lives, and they are clear. They seem to be clear. Now, he might not be all clear, but let's face it, he's not really running the country either. I mean, he gets up and he makes his speeches, but no president is working alone. I can tell you that right now. My opinion, if you want to know about who I think should run, He'll never run, but I have heard him speak in person. He is young. Well, young. He's 67. He's so smart. And I think this guy has such great moral fiber. I think that Bobby Kennedy would be a fantastic candidate to run. He has name recognition as part of the Kennedy family. The problem is, I think somebody would try to kill him. But we find so interesting about him is that he is fearless when it comes to his moral values. And I'm not just talking about the COVID virus. I mean, he's willing to talk about the CIA and give you just very clear nuts and bolts information. I mean, he's not making any bones about it, and he certainly has a lot of information and insight. So in a fantasy world where I think that somebody would really come up to the plate with good morals, good ethics, I think it would be Bobby Kennedy. As far as Joe Biden, you know, if Joe Biden is the same way as he is now next time around, I mean, okay, big deal. I mean, you know, if somebody else comes along better, that's fine too. But I don't think we should say, oh, you're precluded from running, because I really don't think he's in that bad a shape. I don't watch him often, so if there's other people that watch him, you know, every day, then maybe they have a better insight than I do. But for the times I've seen him, he's not really saying anything more or anything less than anybody else. The only thing that frightens me, but this is going to happen whether it's a Democrat or Republican. The only thing that's going to happen with this mandate is it's going to get tighter. And I think that if you get anybody who's more ferocious on either party, they're going to tighten those screws faster and harder. So that's my one issue. But as far as his mental, I mean, he's I think, in better shape than Ronald Reagan was. And I absolutely think that he's not nearly as crazy as Trump. I mean, Trump was not only crazy, but he didn't have to be senile. He was crazy. So it didn't matter. So at least you can have a conversation with this guy. There was no conversations with Trump.
So, if we could put a little kink here in your argument, you're not impressed entirely with this Joe Biden at all.
No, I'm not. I'm not trying to be negative all the time. And we're not realistic when we're looking at this. Very hard it is to get things through. It's really hard to get, you know, to get even a quarter of an inch done in the land of Washington. You have everything coming at you at one time, and you know, you are not a monarch. You are the president. So everyone has to be heard. Everyone's opinion gets to be weighed in. And also, we have this huge problem where our country is pretty much owned lock, stock, and barrel by these corporations. So the president, I don't think you should give him the credit with having all the power that we think he has. He really doesn't have that much power. He just gets to be at the top, listening to everybody's ideas and trying to maybe push people along a little bit. But I don't think that this, particularly at this period of time, that the president has as much power as we would give him. And I also want to, you know, again, point out, be fair. There are some things he has done with, you know, trying to get infrastructure in place, some voters' rights he's working on. These are things that you can bet that Donald Trump would not have been working on. So there are some things that he is trying to work on, and there are some things that were good. It's just I feel that often we run for the negative because we're so used to being barraged with all kinds of crap. And the other thing is we so often can't really believe what we hear because it sounds so good, you know, and then it turns out it's like there was this bill that came through in New York about the anti-harassment bill. Holy crap, it was exactly the opposite. It was like every landlord can now jump on every tenant and totally harass them. But they named it the anti-harassment bill. And that's how I think a lot of people see things, is that sounds great, and then you start reading the fine print. It's like, oh, my God, let me run for the hills.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. E from Edgewater, what do you say? Should Biden, who is kind of suggesting through his actions and speeches and so forth, he's suggesting the attitude of a guy wanting to run again. Should he?
Good afternoon, Eugene.
Hello.
I think he's not going to be physically able to handle another election, but You know, I don't think he's doing a good job, and I think his whole purpose for being in there was just to give him his swan song, because 40 years in politics, being a good old boy, I think he was deserving getting his chance after 8 years of being vice president. Well, why didn't he run in 2016? Because they wanted Hillary to run against Trump and lose, so Trump could be in there for 4 years and terrorize the nation, and then we'd all be glad to have a guy like Joe Biden, and this way he wouldn't be a three-time loser, because if he had run in 2016, he probably would have been a three-time loser, and then he would have missed out his chance to be the president. So it all worked out very well for him. The guy, I think, that's waiting in the wings, and nobody's going to agree with me, but the guy who did more damage to Donald Trump than anybody else, and who probably helped Biden get elected more than anybody else, was the man named Andrew Cuomo, who put the pressure on Trump when the virus first started. There was still a year of his term left. And Andrew Cuomo went bananas on him. We don't have ventilators. Why aren't ventilators in the stockpile in case of an emergency, Mr. Trump? How come we have no ventilators? So he has to run around looking for ventilators. Oh, we don't have any hospital space. I got to put these sick people into nursing homes because we don't have hospital space. Why aren't you planning this stuff out? How come you're not prepared to handle this emergency? Look what's happening to the country because of you, Mr. Trump. Yeah, this is what Cuomo did to him and had him running around like a chicken with no head, trying to figure out what to do. And then we'll convert the Javis Center into a hospital. We'll bring a boat in. And then it all happened. And then suddenly Cuomo is not the governor no more. So what's he doing? Is he planning his
He has a little problem. That he has to take care of.
Up.
Yes, some problems keeping his hands to himself, apparently.
Yeah, like all the rest of them. I haven't heard that he was on the Jeffrey Epstein plane to the island. And how do we know? Look, they want us to know about the island that Jeffrey Epstein had. And an airplane that would take all these Clintons and Trumps to the island to have sex with young girls. How do we know there's not 10 islands out there? And they want us just to know about this one. Yeah, they made it convenient for us to know about the one island. If you can have one
island. You're speculating now. You're speculating. So but who is your person? Andrew Cuomo is your person?
I know it sounds insane.
Joe Biden doing a repeat.
Well, I think if Trump's really planning on running again in 2024, I think the guy that could, like, wipe the floors with him would be Andrew Cuomo. I mean, look, we even played on PRN his award-winning speech about how the doctors and the nurses are the front lines, and they're the heroes. We played it even on PRN, and then suddenly he was in all this trouble. But now I'm hearing that he's being exonerated, that these women are that came forward with these accusations were wrong. So,
well, we'll see. It's
it's
all happening quite interestingly. The choreography couldn't be better. But I don't think that they did not have cases or legitimate cases against Andrew Cuomo. This is politics. And it is sad, but people come to arrangements so that they can prevail. And I think this is one of those cases. Thanks. Thanks, E, for your call today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. So we've explored that, and we're hearing generally there's no great enthusiasm for another Joe Biden run. I hope he's listening. I want to ask this question. This is a much deeper question. Martha Sepulveda, a devout Roman Catholic woman from Medellin, Colombia, finally was granted her wish to die by euthanasia because she had amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or ALS, a progressive neurological disease with no known cure. And it had caused her great pain, she said. She became the first woman in Colombia to be euthanized without having a terminal illness. Should a government decide whether you should proceed according to your intention to die, or that is its own purview? It has its own authority and sole authority over that. What do you think? If you had reached a stage in your life where you said to yourself, I just can't take this another day, and you are asking for the most drastic form of relief, which is to be euthanized, kill yourself. Should that be your choice, or should that be a government's choice as to whether you will be authorized to euthanize yourself? What do you think? It's a very deep question, but it will soon become more and more applicable because we're not hearing about it too much, but that doesn't mean people aren't interested in the right to die. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. What do you think? Should the government have sole authority over a question like that, a matter like that, that is deeply personal and for many people the only good way out of the health situation that they're in? And they see no other alternative, but the government has ultimate control and it makes the decision. Where do you come down on this? 888-874-4888. It's a tough decision. When people reach a point in their own lives where they just can't take another day, they don't see themselves really getting through a protracted period of suffering and pain. And it is logical to them that they should die the way they want to die. But very often they're living in countries, as Martha Sepulveda was living, she was a Colombian, very heavily Catholic, and the government reserves the sole right to decide whether a person should die, legitimately and legally die. Is this fair, you think? Does this make sense? Or is there some other way to deal with the situation? What are your thoughts? If you had a disease, let's say, you were racked with pain night and day, but the government and the law of the land is that you can't do that. You can't kill yourself. So an application is made that this be considered an act of mercy on the part of the government And then it's up to the government to decide whether to permit you to die. Who gets to make the decision, in your view? Who should be the person who determines whether to live or die? If you were in that situation, what would you decide? Or if one of your loved ones were in that situation and was begging to be euthanized, what would your decision be? Would you side with the government that says you're not allowed to make that decision? So, sorry, but you have to put up with the pain and the agony until, in fact, nature takes its course, but you may not take your own life. Heavy question. What do you think is the right decision here? Who has the right to call the shots, as you see it? 888-874-4888. Let's hear you now wax philosophic, and let's see how your brain works on this question. I am not sure, because it hasn't yet come up as a question for me personally, but I don't know that I would have the guts to continue living every day in pain. And I can't do anything about it because the law says that's illegal. And if I were to take my own life, then there would be other repercussions behind that that may apply, of course, not to me in death, but to those who survive, concerning property and distribution and so forth. And this is a pretty tough question. So the first question was quite easy. This is not an easy question, which is why I didn't ask it first. I want to know what you're thinking. How do you reconcile this dilemma? Rose from Queens, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, you trees. Well, the way I look at it is, if you want to kill yourself, that's your business. You do that in your own home, but do not expect to go to a hospital or a doctor's office and expect other people to kill you and to partake of your demand. It is not for the medical profession to be killing people. The hospitals cannot become a place where people go in and have other people kill them. That is bad for trust in the medical system. So you want to do it, fine. You don't go to the hospital if you expect people, if you want to die, you stay home, or you have some kind of will that, you could discharge yourself from the hospital, or your loved one can discharge you from the hospital. But do not go into a doctor's office or a hospital and demand that other people kill you. That is not what hospitals are for. That puts all of us in jeopardy.
Well, hello? What about the consideration that by not having the option yourself, are you a sovereign entity, or even in a matter such as this, you have no control over even your life, your own life?
Well, you lose control over, you're not in charge of the healthcare system. You don't have the sovereign the right to demand that others kill you. Your sovereignty ends when you are going into a place that provides medical care. You go to a place that provides medical care, you should expect medical care. Medical care is not killing people. It's the opposite of killing people.
But now, that is not necessarily,
live, you can
that is not necessarily part of this whole thing.
No, you do.
You're not required to go to a hospital to have somebody kill you and do it.
Medical professionals, doctors and nurses and everybody else are now have to partake of your scheme to go in and kill you. No.
Please, hold it, Rose. It's not about asking people to kill you. It is about choosing to end your life at the time and in the manner in which you choose to end your life. Nobody's saying doctors then will have to perform the act of, quote, killing you, unquote. That's not what it is.
Well,
it is about if you reach a point in your life where you are absolutely going to die, there's no question about it. Medicine can't do anything more for you. Medical treatment can't help you. Everything has been tried and without success. So you are left to coast toward your final days, your final end. But you may be enduring unspeakable pain and suffering while you wait to die.
The medical profession is supposed to alleviate pain. That's the problem I have with all these people who don't want to give out opioids. People in pain should not be in pain. We have medicines to stop people from being in pain. So you give them the medicine. If you know that, any more of this medicine and they're going to go into a coma and die, well, like you said, they're dying anyway, but you don't want to see people dying in pain. So that's where you can give people the opioids, even if you know it goes, they're going to go into a irreversible coma and all that, because as you said, they're terminal anyway. And no, we have an obligation to keep people out of pain. That is one of the primary of purposes of hospitals and medical care. If you can't cure the person, keep them out of pain. But don't go and play this game where, I'm here, but now I want you to withhold water, withhold food, and so I'm going to we're going to watch you slowly dehydrate to death or starve to death. No, we don't do that in hospitals. That's not what we do.
No, we don't. So that's not the question I'm asking. I'm not asking about what we shouldn't do, because there are rules already established as to what medical professionals are not allowed to do by law, because it could be interpreted as partnering in a crime. So we understand that, but that's not my question. My question is, whose authority in the end wins out? But thanks for getting us started on the question.
If you're not in a hospital, then you are sovereign to decide that you want to starve yourself to death. All right, you're in your own home. You want to starve yourself to death? Go right ahead. But once you...
No, that's not the law. That is not the law. Rose, you have to listen every now and then. It's not the law that you can choose to just starve yourself to death. Somebody is going to be implicated. Okay, we're not communicating. You're talking over me. Okay, another time. Joseph from the Bronx, you're on the air. What do you say?
Thank you, Tree. This is my first time calling you. I've been listening to you for 100 years.
Okay. You sound good for a 100-year-old guy.
And I'm getting close to it, believe it or not. But I'm calling on this. I never called a radio station or anything. But I went through a medical situation about 20 years ago now. I had a massive heart attack. And I was laying up in ICU for about 6 days. And, you know, you're hooked up to all the machines and stuff, you know. And luckily, I was in sound mind, I guess you'd say, or at least sound as I could be. And I wasn't in any pain or anything, you know, because it got you all morphined up, you know. But it occurred to me that I am totally in these people's control, and I have no control. And at that point, it never felt like I was near death, so I wasn't thinking about it. But since then, I have reflected on how I would feel if I were in a situation where, like that Shibo lady, I think it was years ago, that was in a total vegetative state and went through the whole thing with the government about whether or not to pull the plug. Remember that?
Yes.
And I feel if I was in sound mind, I want to be the one to decide whether or not I want to put up with this state. And I think the person should be allowed, if you mentioned Lou Gehrig's disease or something, right?
Yes.
ALS. Right. I think the patient should be allowed to say, okay, this is a one-way trip. Why do I have to take all this pain to live another 2 weeks, 2 days, too much, 2 years? Let me check out now. Why not?
What if the patient is not conscious, not in a state of consciousness to be able to make that determination?
Then it gets
difficult. Does the patient still have the right? Or do they first make a declaration, a written declaration, and that is what guides the relationship between the caregivers and the patient?
That would be great if they had that opportunity to do that beforehand. But like I said, see, my heart attack was all of a sudden, so I didn't have any pre-planned signed agreements, you know, or anything. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure a lot of people would wind up in that situation where there's been no pre-arranged agreement as to what would happen if I'm in this state, you know. Just there you are. And all I'm saying is, my feeling is, when I was trapped, there you are, I would like it to be my decision if I go through this or if I check out. I mean, we're all going to check out. You know, why do we get so carried away about whether it's going to be today, next week, or next year, or 10 years from now? You know, this is a one-way trip. And it's scary, yes. We don't like the idea because we don't know what death is all about. You know, nobody's come back and said, hey, you know, was it so bad or was great or heaven was great or hell was bad, you know. So it's scary, but we're all heading that way. And I wouldn't want to be...
So in your view,
yes,
does the state's decision supersede the individual's decision?
That's what I'm saying. No, I think it's the individual that should be allowed to make that decision, not the state.
Well, all right. Thank you very much, Joseph. Thanks for calling in and contributing. Ali from New York, you're on the air. What is your view on this question?
Hi, it's Trace.
Hello.
My view on this question is we don't have sovereignty over our body, and you could just tell by abortion that people wanted to control, and the government, they control your body. So also, if we commit a crime, they kill you. They put you on death row. And a lot of countries, they have the death penalty. So they will kill you. So you don't have control over your body. In this situation with this woman, and she's in Colombia, and if you're mentally capable to make a decision, I think people should have the right to take their life. Before we were born, we never asked our parents that we wanted to born, to be alive. We never did.
So we never asked, huh?
We never did. So for 18 years, they have control over us. And the government, because the government first, and you could see with the vaccine, all these vaccinations that we have to give to our kids, And we have to if we want to send them to school. So we don't have control over our bodies. Then when we reach the age of 18, that you're an adult, then it's still the government is making decisions over us. Even if when you get into prison or even outside of prison, there are rules, policy that we have to follow up. So therefore, we don't have control over our body. So I think it's very important for us to decide, yes, we want it to go. And we want it to go in our own terms. And being that she's in Colombia, the government is making decision for her. Duque, the president of Colombia, today is the 12th of January. And the so-called guerrillas, which is part of the government, they had already 5 massacres for this year. Over 20-something people they have been killed in Colombia. So overall, the government is making decisions about, and who are they killing? They're killing labor leaders, human rights abusers, Afro-Colombia, indigenous people. So they don't only have control over when we're sick, but even when we are not sick, they killed us. So, yes, I think it's important for us, very important, to make that decision if we want it to go and we are capable and mentally and physically able to make a decision and take care of that. I think it's very important. But a country like Colombia, that they're killing people left and right, and it's the government who's killing them, and then the government is making the decision, no, I don't want you to take your life. Come on. And even here, when they put you in death row, what do? The government killed you. So the government has control over you almost 100%. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your very frank analysis. Thank you. Jackie from New York, you're on the air.
So the government has control over you.
Hello, Jackie, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for your very frank analysis. Thank you.
Jackie. Hello, Jackie, hi. Are you listening? Good. You're on the air.
Can you hear me? I'm calling.
Hello,
yeah.
You're on the air.
Can you hear me? Good afternoon.
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay.
But I'm also hearing the background
noise. I'm listening
noise.
To my Alexa in the phone, so hold Alexa off. Okay, I'm calling to respond to this question that you're raising. It's a very difficult and painful question for many of us. Okay, first of all, there is such a thing as a healthcare directive or healthcare proxy, which they call in New York, which I urge everyone over 18 and up to prepare that. And in those written statements, it tells the healthcare providers what you want, how you want to be treated, and if it's a terminal situation, how you should be treated in a terminal situation. Okay, that's one thing. But now, the other issue is the question that you're raising about the state versus the human choice is a much more profound and difficult question. But if you're in a medical facility, then you can exercise using your healthcare proxy, and you should have one and you should give one to whoever you name as your proxy. If you're at home and you decide that you don't want to be treated, I think the individual has a right to make that decision. But where the challenge comes in is when you involve the government in your health care provision. Like if you're going to the emergency room, you don't have a health care proxy, like the gentleman spoke about when he had the heart attack. Now we're involving another entity, which is healthcare and the government. So now people are faced with this decision, you know, how do they want to be treated? I don't know what Rose's background and her profession is, but if she's in a healthcare profession, she knows they have hospice care, they have palliative care. So there are some provisions that are part of the medical structure that provides for people who are dying. So but she seemed to have a strong emotional reaction to your question, and I understand that. So I hope what I'm saying is helpful.
Well, yes, and also a bit incomplete, because the question really aims to be, to have a definitive answer. Who in the end has greater say in how end of life is to be treated? The state regards it, if you do it by yourself, that it will not agree really to help you end your life, because it would be, as lawyers see it, many lawyers see it, it would be the same as assisting a suicide. And that's not what they want to do. So you have to do it on your own. But at the same time, the state declares that taking your own life is against the law. So you are committing an illegal act when you do that. So what is the choice that people will make? That the state is not going to help you end your life. And if you do it, it is quite possible that it would be said that you broke the law. It is against the law to take your life.
Okay, may I try to respond?
Sure.
There's a couple ways that this can be changed or challenged, and that is through, you know, legislation. You can have laws that permit people to commit suicide. And I don't even know if it's always suicide if the person is terminal and they've decided they want to go. But anyway, the end-of-life decisions, we'll put it that way. So, I mean, it can be achieved through legislative means, but the law would have to be changed. But I also was profoundly touched by Ali's comments, because there's so much hypocrisy in the society. You say, oh, a person's not allowed to commit end-of-life decisions that would result in termination. But at the same time, there's lots of things already existing in our society that will ultimately lead to termination of life. Like, you know, in prison, people don't have adequate health care. You have elders living in prison that are not getting, you know, the prison health services is a joke. You have people that go to municipal hospitals that die just out of sheer neglect and lack of medical care or medical even equipment. You have these three-tier medical systems that exist in America. You don't have free health care in America, even in the midst of a raging pandemic. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. So is it better for a person to go into the hospital? And like I talked to a gentleman who was a physician assistant, and he said that 35 people that he knew of, they put him on the respirator, the ventilators, and 35 people died. So, I mean, what we have to consider, does it make it more appropriate because it's behind a hidden curtain of a hospital scene? Or is it better for someone to die in the dignity of their own home with their families? Okay, I'm going to go, Eutrice, because I'm getting upset.
It was not meant to get you upset, but to offer us something.
It's the situation.
Okay, I'll talk to you another day. Thank you, Jean. Thank you so very much, especially for making such a strong effort to help us understand. Thank you. Brother David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Your thoughts?
I've thought about both questions for today. I'd like to take the last one first. As I think about it, I think about all the people who make that decision for themselves and commit suicide. Lots of people do that every day. But what I'm really thinking about is that people make the decision to terminate their lives, and certainly in this country, by their lifestyle, by what they eat and drink. And we have a tremendous problem here with people living the type of lifestyle in terms of nutrition, for example, all kinds of...
If I may interrupt for a second. I understand where you're going, but it's not where the question is supposed to lead us.
Okay, I'll get right to the question. I think that person has the decision that person can make him or herself. I believe that someone desiring to terminate life should have the decision. And I think that some places they have that right, in places like Switzerland and so forth. So that's the way I look at the question. That should be a personal right for someone who's got his or her faculties and can make a decision like that, whether or not to terminate life.
Okay. And you said you had a response to the other question as well.
Let's see. Okay. My response to the other question is that the President of the United States doesn't run the show. And anyone who gets to that point where you have this one-party, two-division system has to be essentially approved by the ruling oligarch and elite that run the country. So I don't think they're going to let someone up there who is not in the employ of those who rule. So if the ruling class decides that Joe Biden would be a nice guy to be sort of a figurehead again for 4 more years, I think they will support him, because there's no way that Joe Biden or anyone else is going to get into that president seat as executive officer, as I call it, without the approval of those who rule. No one who is opposed to the oligarchy that runs the United States is going to be president. So if they decide it's all right, because they got lots of other people who can tell him what to do and guide him and shepherd him along the way, whether he has dementia or not, I see it as they can live with that, because those other people will make the decisions and shepherd him along to have the people think that he's really the president and he's the decision maker who decides everything.
All right. Well, thank you, Brother David. Thank you all for contributing today. It was not an easy question. In the end, I asked the easy one first, and the tough one came behind it. But you dealt with it very, very well. We, from time to time, we should be getting ourselves accustomed to dealing with these kinds of things, because they may inevitably occur. And you find yourself in a situation where you never thought about it. You know, you just never thought about it. But there you are, smack dab in the middle of it, and you have to make a decision. What is the, quote, right decision, unquote? And what makes it right? That is also part of the difficulty of a question like that. Is what's right for you right for me? Is what's right for me right for you? And the difficulty in our society is that we have the intervening issue of laws that are made that really don't care about what you and I think. They're made based on what they believe, the people, legislators making these laws, is a right thing to do, which may or may not be the case. But it is something worth pondering. And the question still has to do with who inevitably has the final say, who has the right to do a thing. Thanks so much. I appreciate your participation. And we'll come again together tomorrow and talk about some other things. Bye-bye.